Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Office of Seniors Advocate conference call. I would like to introduce Isabel McKenzie. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. This is Isabel McKenzie. Thank you very much for calling in. I know there wasn't a lot of notice for this report coming out. It's a short report, but I think it's an important report that may generate some questions, and so I determined that I would offer the opportunity to release the report through a conference call. Just so all of you will have it in front of you, I would encourage you, if you have not already done so, to go to the website, seniorsadvocatebc.ca. Under Reports and Publications, you will see a report titled Seniors at Home and in Long-Term Care. That is the report I'm speaking to. And there is a short slide presentation that I will be speaking to that you can go through as well. And I will tell you when to advance the slides. So I'll just give everybody 2 seconds to make sure you have that in front of you. Okay, slide number one, which is the cover slide, Seniors at Home and Long-Term Care, a 27-2018 snapshot. This is going to become an annual report from this office, and it's going to be released following the annual release of data from the Canadian Institute of Health Information, CIHI, which provides for us a very robust picture of the health and status and well-being of our most frail seniors, those being seniors who live in long-term care facilities in British Columbia and those who receive home care services in British Columbia. If you want to advance to slide two. So just to talk a minute about the data come from the INTERI assessments. These are assessments that are administered annually in home care once when you are admitted to the program every year thereafter, although if there is a sudden change in a health status of a client, there would be a reassessment. In long-term care, every resident is assessed upon admission and every quarter thereafter. In the data we are examining for this year for home care, there are 31,775 assessments, and in the healthcare data we are examining for long-term care, there are 34,251 assessments. Many of you on this call will be familiar with the INTERI assessments, but for those of you who are not, it's a very complex assessment that measures health status, social well-being. It probably has about 350 different assessment points that we put into it. It generally takes about an hour and a half, sometimes longer, to complete with the individual. And from the data in there, some of it we use as what we would call raw data, and other data is fed into algorithms that will tell us things like degree of frailty, et cetera. If any of you have more questions, particularly about the INTERI assessments, please contact our office afterwards if you wish. We can certainly send a sample of an INTERI assessment to you, or you can contact CIHI directly. So let's talk first about the home care population, and I'd ask you to go to slide three. So what do the data this year tell us about BC's home care population, over 90% of whom are seniors, age 65 and over? Well, the data tell us some things we probably knew, and it also tells us some things that either we didn't know or maybe we thought was a little bit different of a picture in British Columbia. So let's talk first of all about age. British Columbia has the oldest home care clients in BC. The average age of a home care client in BC is 80.5 years, and the national average is 78.7 years. This has remained relatively unchanged in the last 5 years. So we are the oldest, but we haven't been getting much older over the past 5 years. Frailty. In addition to having the oldest clients in Canada, BC also has the most frail clients in Canada. Now, there's many ways to measure frailty. We have chosen to use the method for assigning placement, what we call the MAPLE algorithm, and we have used a score of 4 or 5 as indicating the highest degree of frailty. This would be describing a home support client as being having high or very high need and would likely be able to qualify for or be near placement in a care facility. In British Columbia, 57% of our home care clients meet this criteria, and it's 8.2% higher than the Canadian average. This has increased over the last 5 years by about 3%. So not dramatically, but there is clearly a trend line showing that our clients on our home care program, on our home support program, are getting more frail in the last 5 years. What's interesting is that despite the fact that we have more frail clients, our clients are actually more medically stable. And so 32% of our home support clients show no sign of health instability. They are considered medically stable. It's only 22% nationally. So an interesting dichotomy of greater frailty, older age, but greater medical stability. On the dementia, one of the things that's very interesting is that in this last year, the prevalence of dementia amongst our home support clients has decreased by 2.1%. And in fact, if we look over the last 5 years, there's been a 4% decrease in the prevalence of dementia amongst our home support, home care population. Having said that, we have a distinctly higher rate of dementia amongst our home care population than the national average. We have 35% of our clients with a diagnosis of dementia compared to 27.7% as the national average. However, what's also interesting is that the severity of the impairment caused by the dementia is not as great in BC. And in fact, the rate of moderate to severe cognitive impairment in British Columbia home support clients is almost 20% lower than the national average. So we have many more of our home support clients diagnosed with dementia, but it's not as severe a dementia as we're seeing in the rest of the nation. And that could be because we make greater efforts and have been successful in our promotion of earlier diagnosis, which is a good thing. Let's talk about the physical limitations within our home care population. One of the interesting things is that our home support clients, despite being more frail, are not actually as physically impaired as the national average. 50% of our home support clients have no limitation in the performance of their activities of daily living, compared to 43% nationally. So in some aspects, that makes a little bit of sense, that what we're seeing, because we have such higher rates of dementia, we're seeing people on our home support program because of their cognitive impairment more than because of their physical limitations. Renal failure. One of the most interesting data points to jump out of this analysis of our home care population is that BC has a 45% higher rate of renal failure amongst our home support clients. It's increased 16% in the last 5 years. So 13.2% of our home support clients experience renal failure. We're really going to want to look at that and try to understand what's causing that higher rate out here in British Columbia compared to the national average. Caregiver distress. This has been a topic that my office has highlighted quite a bit. The government has made efforts to try to address it. The good news is that caregiver distress has actually decreased in the last year. It's gone down by 3.2%. But if we look at the last 5 years, it's still increased overall by 3.4%. So we're still increasing over the last 5 years, and it's still the second highest rate in Canada. So I think we need to keep our eye on the ball around caregiver distress. I know there's been some recent announcements by the government for programs and supports to help alleviate the caregiver distress. Those have not been implemented yet and are not reflected in this in these data, but it's possible that we're going to start to see a trend where we actually are making some inroads in decreasing significantly the level of caregiver distress in our province. Drug use. One of the things that's interesting is that 14.3% of our home care clients are prescribed an antipsychotic, and this is 17.2% above the Canadian average. Now, you're going to hear me talk later in this presentation about our drug use of antipsychotics in our long-term care facilities, which is very high as well. But interestingly enough, we also have this very high utilization, higher than the national average, in our home care population. And so I think we need to look at that and what's happening in our prescribing patterns. The rate of depression, more accurately described in the RIE data as showing signs of depression, has risen by just over 10% in the last 5 years. And it's found in 21.4% of BC clients. But it is 13% lower than the national average. Now, what's going to happen if we keep rising and the national average remains static is that we will converge at some point, and we will be, in fact, at the national average and perhaps above it if the trajectory of increase keeps rising. If you'd like to go now to slide 4, the next slide. Want to talk a minute about daily pain. So our number of clients experiencing pain has risen almost 5% in the last 5 years, but we are about 16% lower than the national average. So about 49% of our home support clients are experiencing daily pain, compared to about 58% is the national average. Now, we're going to talk a minute about the arthritis rate. That could be why we're experiencing less pain. We have lower rates of arthritis. We have a very robust program around pain management in BC. We've targeted that. We may be successful at that. But we need to be cautious around balancing pain control and use of opioid medications in order to address that pain. About 75% of our clients in our home support program are diagnosed with heart or circulation disease, and this is similar to the Canadian average, and it's been almost unchanged compared to 5 years ago. So we're not getting better, but we're not getting worse. We do have a lower rate of arthritis, 17.6% lower than the national average. About 43% of our home support clients suffer from arthritis, compared to 52% nationally. It hasn't increased very much in the last 5 years. It has seen an increase of about 2%. About a quarter of our home care clients, 24%, have diabetes, and this is similar to other provinces and has remained unchanged for the past 5 years. Now I want to talk a little bit about our population in long-term care, and I'm going to ask you to move to the next slide, slide number 5. You'll find the number in the lower left-hand corner of the slide. So in our long-term care population, we are slightly older than the national average, but we are not the oldest. So the average age of a person in long-term care in British Columbia is 85. But if we swing to the other side of the country on the East Coast in Nova Scotia, for example, we find there's an average age of 90 in the long-term care facilities. Now, in our care facilities in British Columbia, as in our home support population, we do have a higher rate of dementia than the national average, but it's a much lower differential. So our residents in care facilities in British Columbia have a 3.9% higher rate of dementia relative to the national average. And one of the things that I think is important is to note this means 64.4%, so call it 65%, of residents in BC have a diagnosis of dementia, compared to the national average of 62%. And I really want us to think about that for a moment, because I hear a lot of statements about everybody in the care facility has dementia. That's not true. The majority do. That's correct, 65%. But that still leaves 35% who don't, and I think we need to remember that. Now, the rate is increasing. It's increasing at the rate of about 1% a year. So if we look over the past 5 years, the rate of dementia in our care facilities has risen by 4.8%, or round that up to 5% or 1% a year. Again, in our long-term care dementia population, similar to our home care population, yes, we have higher rates of diagnosed dementia, but we have lower rates of the moderate to severe cognitive impairment. And so in our care homes, while we have a 3.9% higher rate of dementia, we've got a 3.8% lower rate, 4% lower rate of moderate to severe cognitive impairment. And again, that may be related to efforts around promoting earlier diagnosis. Physical limitations. Again, in our home care population, in our long-term care population, like our home care population, we see a lower rate of moderate to severe physical limitations compared to the Canadian average. So 72% of our residents have rate of moderate to severe impairment compared to 82% nationally. Again, it has been rising in BC long-term care homes at a rate of just a little bit over 1% a year. So over the past 5 years, the rate of moderate to severe physical limitations has risen by 5.5%. Aggressive behaviors, and this, interestingly enough, is often one of the things that links to our explanation for use of certain medications like antipsychotics. What's interesting is that BC residents have a 17% lower rate of aggressive behaviors than the national average. So we have 35% versus the national average of 41%. Our rate has increased over the past 5 years, but not dramatically. It's gone up 2.1% over the last 5 years, so less about 0.5% a year. And so I think we need to keep that in mind when I talk a little bit later about the antipsychotics. Interestingly enough, BC residents are 16% more likely to be assessed as having limited or no social engagement. And I say it's interesting because when we look at some of the other data around our residents having less severe cognitive impairment and less severe physical limitation, one might expect to actually see more social engagement with our population. And in fact, we're seeing less. Now, we've been improving over the past 5 years. We've gone, we've increased social engagement by about 5%, so 1% a year. So we are moving in the right direction. But I think it's a question we have to be asking ourselves. So, the META number is, the national average, is about 44% with no social engagement, and in British Columbia, it's 51%. So next slide, slide 6. Again, in our care homes, in terms of incontinence, both bladder and bowel incontinence, we actually see lower rates than the national average. We have an 8.2% lower rate of bladder incontinence and an 11% lower rate of bowel incontinence. And so about 69% of our residents have bladder incontinence compared to 75% nationally. And we have about 50% with bowel incontinence versus about 56% nationally. And these are important measures. First of all, it's, as you can tell, affects a large percentage of the population, but also addresses issues like perhaps socially inhibiting or limiting conditions that would cause people to not participate as much in their care homes, and certainly has an impact or effect on the staff and the staffing levels in our care homes, as it is potentially more time-consuming and onerous to care for residents who are experiencing that level and degree of incontinence. Health instability. Again, in our care facilities in British Columbia, we see that the degree of health instability measured by our CHEST score is lower than the national average, so about 12% less. So we have 51% of residents in BC versus 58% nationally who are experiencing health instability. Also, we have a lower rate of depression in our care facilities, just as we do in our home care population. We have a 24.8% lower rate of depression. But unlike our home care population, where the rate's been rising in the last 5 years, in our care facilities, the rate has been dropping, and it's decreased 10% in BC compared to 5 years ago. And so that's a good thing. We have about a 19% lower rate of psychiatric and mood disorders in BC, 30% compared to a national average of 38%. This has increased in BC in the last 5 years, not by a whole lot, by about 3% over the 5 years, so less than 1% a year. We have a lower rate of hypertension, which is a good thing. 18.5% lower rate of hypertension. 48% of our residents have it compared to 59% nationally, although we have seen an increase, about just over 6% in the last 5 years. We have a lower rate of heart and circulation disease, 16% lower than the national average, although, again, it's been increasing in BC compared to 5 years ago. And what's interesting is while our rate of diabetes in the community is the same as the national average, in our care homes it's about 19 to 20% lower than the national average. About 21% of our residents have diabetes compared to 26% nationally. And it's not been increasing that much, about a little less than 2% over the last 5 years. In our home care population, similar to our in our long-term care population, similar to our home care population, we also find the lower rate of arthritis, 26% in BC compared to 39% nationally. And this number has actually been decreasing in BC care homes over the last 5 years. So we've seen a decrease of 5% over the last 5 years. And so what's interesting is that our daily pain experience in residential care is higher versus in the community where it's lower, and yet both have lower rates of arthritis compared to the national average. One of the things that stands out in the data that we've mined from the reports is our prescription rate of antipsychotics without a supporting diagnosis in our long-term care facilities. So when we talk about the rate in the community, all we know is the rate of prescription. We don't know, we don't have diagnostic codes to know whether, in fact, there's an underlying diagnosis. When we look at the prescriptions for our long-term care facilities, we can link that to diagnostic codes, and we know whether or not there's an underlying diagnosis. And so what we find is that in British Columbia care homes, there's a 19% higher rate of antipsychotic use without a supporting diagnosis than we have at the national average. So about one out of four of our residents are being prescribed an antipsychotic without an underlying diagnosis to support that prescription, and that's 19% higher than the national average. Now, we have been decreasing in BC, but in the last year, we have not decreased at all. And so I'm going to show you a slide a little later that's going to show the decrease and compare us to other provinces. But clearly, we do need to do more work. Interesting things that also talk about the more robust nature of some of our residents, or the less frailty of residents in care in BC, 70% less likely to be on oxygen therapy. 2% of the population in BC care homes are on oxygen therapy compared to 7% nationally. And we've decreased by 30% compared to 5 years ago. And it's also interesting, given the increasing attention on hospitalization of residents in long-term care, that BC care homes are 72% less likely to have residents being monitored for an acute condition. Only 8% of our residents are being monitored for an acute condition versus 29% nationally. And the question is, part of that will be a reflection of the reduced degree of frailty of our residents, but part of it may also be that they're being monitored in the hospital instead of being monitored in the care home. On the therapies, one of the interesting things, we're 68% less likely to receive physical therapy, PT, in BC care facilities, but we're 62% more likely to get occupational therapy, OT. So it's hard to read, given the interchangeability sometimes of those therapies, PT, OT, exactly what that means, but I think we need to look at that more. So to put it in perspective, 10% of BC residents received physical therapy in the last 7 days prior to assessment versus 32% nationally received physical therapy in the 7 days preceding the assessment. Occupational therapy, 7% received occupational therapy 7 days prior to assessment if they were in BC, compared to 4.5% nationally. So the PT numbers are higher in absolute terms than the OT numbers, but percentage-wise, we're receiving significantly less in BC versus nationally. Now, the good news is we're twice as likely to receive recreational therapy in BC compared to the national average. So I don't know if there's any rec therapists on the line, but if there are, you can take heart by the fact that we've got 25% of our residents getting rec therapy in the last 7 days versus 13% nationally, and we've increased by 13.5% over the last 5 years. Now, 25% is still a woefully low number, I think we would all agree, but compared to the national numbers, we're doing quite well. And again, I still keep coming back to why have we got such low social engagement when relative to the national average when we've got much higher engagement through recreational therapy. Next slide, slide 7. So when we look at this data in its totality, and it raises a number of questions, and I'll talk about those at the end, but there's a couple of things, particularly on the long-term care population, that the data are reinforcing messages that this office has brought forward in the past. And one of the messages we've brought forward in the past is identifying seniors who are living in long-term care facilities in this province who actually could be supported in the community if we had more robust supports in the community. So if we look at our data from home care, what we can take heart with is we are managing to care for very frail people in the community. That's what the data tell us. We are managing to do that. How successfully, in terms of the quality of life for the senior and their family, that's a different kind of measure. That's not what these data tell us. But what we know is that the complexity of clients has been increasing in the community. The intensity of the home supports we've been offering has reduced, and we have not significantly increased, in fact, almost not increased at all, subsidized assisted living in the community. And so one of the things we look at is we look at who is it in our care facility based on diagnostic data that could be supported in the community. And one of the measures, there's many measures, but we look at somebody with an ADL activity daily living score of 2 or less and a CPS score of 2 or less, and we say that person could be accommodated in the community. So a person with activity of daily living score of 2 or less will be somebody who may need no mobility aids, may be completely physically functional, or they may need up to a walker. So if you're at a 2, you may have balance issues, you may require a walker, but you are certainly able to weight bear and mobilize for the most part on your own, maybe with a little bit of assistance. And if you have a cognitive score, a CPS score of 2 or less, you may have no cognitive impairment, it may be 0, or you may be a person for whom some of the complexities around investing and being able to deal with those kinds of issues may prove a little bit challenging, but you would certainly be able to function, for example, in assisted living or in your own home if there were sufficient supports. So what this slide shows is BC compared to Alberta and Ontario. And these are the residents in our care facilities who have an ADL score of 2 or less and a CPS score of 2 or less. And so as you can see from the chart, BC, and we've compared 2013-14, so 5 years ago, with the latest data we have for 17-18. And as you can clearly see, in BC, we have a much higher percentage of highly physically functioning adults in our long-term care facilities, 27.6%, so 28% in the last round of data, have an ADL score of 2 or less and are living in our facilities, our care facilities. That's only 14% in Alberta and only 14% in Ontario. We've made some gains in the last 5 years. It used to be 30%, so we're moving in the right direction. You can see Alberta maybe is starting to move in the wrong direction, but that's a very small shift. Ontario has also been moving in the right direction. Then we look over at our CPS 2 or less, and you see that in British Columbia, we've actually increased the number of people, but ever so slightly, in the last 5 years who have CPS 2 or less, and we're still higher than Alberta and Ontario. It's not as dramatic a difference as the ADL scores indicate, but the trend line, the theme continues, that for whatever reason, in British Columbia care facilities, we seem to have more physically able and more cognitively able people than they do in Alberta and Ontario. And by the measurement of their physical ability and cognitive ability, it measures very favorably with a person who could live independently in the community. And so I'm really going to be continuing to talk to the government about our home care program and about our subsidized assisted living program and how we can better support these folks. Some of you may remember that the government did make amendments to the Community Care Assisted Living Act to increase our ability to support some folks in our assisted living sector, but unfortunately the regulations have not yet been put in force, and so those changes in practical terms have not come to bear. The next slide I'd like you to look at, slide 8, is the antipsychotics without a diagnosis of psychosis. And I think what's important here is to recognize that this issue was probably identified, I think, about 6 years ago as a quality indicator by CIHI, and we started to measure it and we started to focus on it. And indeed, we have moved towards reducing it. And we've talked a lot about the reductions we've been able to achieve in British Columbia. But we need to look at other provinces and look at their populations and what they've been able to achieve. And what you see here is that for whatever reason, British Columbia has not been as successful as other provinces at reducing antipsychotic use, even with a population that has less prevalence of aggressive behaviors and less prevalence of psychiatric and mood disorders. So our baseline arguably should be lower, but it's higher. And so what you see is in the last 5 years, BC has reduced antipsychotic use without a diagnosis by 22%. That's a good achievement, and we need to congratulate the people who achieved it. But we didn't move the needle at all this last year. We stalled in our reductions. And when you look at the other provinces, and I realize they're not labeled, they should immediately, next to BC is Alberta, and you see that 25% was the baseline, 25.8 5 years ago. They reduced their misuse by 33%. They're down at 17%. Move next to Manitoba, and you will see that they reduced their misuse by 17%, so a lower drop than BC, but their baseline was the lowest to start with, and they're down at 19%, 19.7%. And then on the far right, you have Ontario, which was much closer to BC at the beginning, 30.5%, but they've managed to reduce their misuse by 35.6%, and they're at 19.6%. So clearly, we have got to do a lot of introspection around why it is in British Columbia we have this higher use of antipsychotics in our long-term care facilities. Part of it is going to be explained by the higher use in the community, but not all of it. Because interestingly enough, Alberta is actually the highest for use of antipsychotics in the home care population. They're actually higher than British Columbia, but they're the lowest in use of antipsychotic medications in long-term care. So that doesn't explain why we have this phenomenon. And it's one of the things that my office is looking at. So if we could go to slide 9. A number of questions come out of this report. So first of all, the antipsychotic use, why is it so high? Why do we have such high rates of renal failure? I think we need to look at that. Is it linking to medication use? There are medications, in fact, that do exacerbate renal failure, and are we prescribing those more prevalently than we should? And why do we see higher functioning seniors in long-term care? Again, they're not just higher functioning, they're functioning at a level that could be accommodated in the community, and we need to remember that the majority of seniors, not everybody, but vast majority, would prefer to live independently in the community. Why do we have lower rates of monitoring acute conditions? We need to parse that one a little bit more and find out where are the acute conditions being monitored. Now, part of the explanation can be found in our residents appear to have less acute care needs than residents on the national average, but it doesn't explain the entirety of the delta because it's a very high number. It's 72%. And why do we have such a high rate of caregiver distress? Again, part of that will link to the fact that our caregivers are caring for more complex, older, frailer people than the national average. But I think we need to keep looking at ways we can support these caregivers. Why do our residents in care facilities experience much higher rates of daily pain than those in the community? That's a very interesting question. Are we perhaps using antipsychotics where we should be using analgesics? That's a very good question we should be asking ourselves and thinking about. And in fact, are some of the behaviors that we're addressing with the antipsychotics not related to a dementia but related to a pain that the resident is not able to verbalize and communicate as pain, and so it's being misdiagnosed and mistreated. And why do we have lower rates of social engagement? Again, a bunch of indicators tell us we should have higher rates of social engagement, but yet we find that we have lower rates. So finally, the end, slide 10. I'm happy now to open it up to any questions that anybody may have. I encourage everybody to, it's a short report, there's a lot of numbers in it. I encourage people to read it. Our job here is to get this data out to the public, to get people thinking about the kinds of questions that need to be answered, and hopefully we will spark the dialogue that will help us find clues to how we can address some of the issues that have been identified in these data.
Thank you. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to queue up for a question, please press 01 on your keypad. Again, if you would like to queue up for a question, please press 01. And to withdraw your question, press the pound sign. So we have a few questions queuing up right now. Our first question is from Megan Thomas from CBC. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Isabel, can you give us a sense of why it's such a concern if we do have these higher rates of prescription of antipsychotics?
Well, you have to remember, Megan, that they're being prescribed without an underlying diagnosis to support that prescription. So if a person needs an antipsychotic, they should be getting the antipsychotic. That's not what this number is talking about. Those people have been taken out of this number. These are people who are not experiencing bipolar or psychosis or other diagnoses that would require the use of an antipsychotic. Why we are concerned is because antipsychotics are extremely powerful drugs and they have significant side effects. And in the frail seniors population, the side effects that they can create include mental confusion, drowsiness, which can lead to falls, which can obviously lead to injury. The mental confusion can start to have people being misdiagnosed potentially as having dementia when in fact what they have or are experiencing is a reaction to the drug. These are very powerful drugs.
And to follow up, do you have any thoughts on why the trend was going down and it has stopped going in that direction?
Well, I think, frankly, it's like a lot of things. It was a focus. We focused on it, and our ability to sustain focus over time, regardless of the issue. Antipsychotics is one of many where we focused on it, and we got some results, and we thought, we've done our job, and now we've moved on to the next thing we're going to focus on. I think, frankly, that's a large part of it. I think, and if we're not careful, we're going to start to see a reversal of the trend. The downward trajectory as we start to not focus on it. So I think we just have to continue to say, okay, this isn't acceptable to have this rate, particularly given how much higher it is than the national rate, and we need to keep doing what we've been doing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Megan. And we have four more questions in the queue. Our next one is from Donna Galt from Hardy Bay Seniors. Please go ahead.
My question is real simple. I just thought reading the numbers and understanding we're living in Port Hardy, why hasn't the government offered us subsidized housing in the community so that we could offer those special plans? Right now, we have stress, of course, in our community from the caregivers, but we haven't got anything in between going to the hospital or going to a full long-term care.
Donna, you've identified exactly the issue I will be speaking again to the government about, and it's going to be highlighted again in our home support report. And I think what we are seeing to some degree is for the senior, the only option, and indeed the most affordable option, is to go into long-term care. For the BC government, that's the most expensive option. And it would make much more sense to provide somebody with rent relief in order for them to stay home and get their home support services than to subsidize them in long-term care. And because when you go into long-term care, everything is paid for, and we only take a percentage of your income. Hello?
Hello. I don't know what happened there. There.
Okay.
Of course, that just leads me into no funding for senior centers so we can drag the people out of their homes into where they could have social connectivity. And then the next point is, after we are sent off to our long-term places, we're left not socialized, right? Not because they're doing anything wrong. Don't be thinking that, because I'm sure people just can't keep going into those places where there isn't a place really to gather, to meet, all the things. I'm just trying to explain to you that it doesn't make sense to me, not at all, because everybody knew we were all going to come to many, many of us, right, at the right time, but there isn't any real funding for the senior center to help. We're all doing it as volunteers, not with people.
Hello? I've been cut off. Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello, Isabel. I can still hear you as the operator. Okay, it looks like the caller may have been cut off.
Okay.
Okay, are you ready for the next question?
I am.
Okay, so the next question is from Camille Baines of Canadian Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, I'd like to know how you measure caregiver distress.
Okay, so caregiver distress amongst the home care population in the RYE assessment, we ask two sets of questions to the caregiver. And from those two questions that we ask, we make a determination that there is caregiver distress. And so the questions are about their ability to cope and their ability to continue providing care to their loved one. And if the caregiver expresses that they are not able to cope and that they are no longer able to provide care for their loved one, we would consider that caregiver to be in distress. And it's the same question and measurement that's used in all of the jurisdictions that use the inter-RYE assessment for comparability.
Okay, so having that information, and I'm trying to flip through the report to find it, but has that gone up or down? I think you said it's worse now, or?
Well, over the last 5 years, Camille, it has gone up. It's gone up, I think, about 3 point something percent in the last 5 years. In the last year, it's actually gone down just a little bit over 2%. And so what we need to measure is there a trend developing based on this year's data, or is it an anomaly? And you'll see that when you look at the, one of the reasons we look at 5 years is because it gives you a better sense of what the trend over time is than just what's happening in a particular year. So it's a little early to say that it's reducing. I think it also is a little early to say it's continuing to increase. I think what we can say is that it continues to be the second highest rate in Canada.
Okay, and if I could ask one more question, if that's okay?
Yeah.
About social engagement, I'm thinking that lack of it would lead to other issues like depression and the use of antipsychotics. So are there suggestions or anything going on in order to try to increase that social engagement to prevent issues like depression? Because that seems like a, you know, kind of a no-brainer if social engagement is an issue, like for anyone, not just seniors, but...
Yeah. And I think the important thing is that we have other data that tell us we shouldn't have lower social engagement. So, you know, we have a lower prevalence of severe dementia. We have a lower prevalence of aggressive behaviors. We have a lower prevalence of depression, you know, all of these things. And so why have we got this low social engagement? What we have started to do here at OSA is in our quick facts directory for each of our care facilities, we have indicated what their index of social engagement is. That's how we measure the social engagement through the RI tool. And my experience has been that you find you make improvements in moving the needle forward in a systemic way. It usually starts with measuring data, getting it out there, getting people to understand it, and then you start to see the corrections happening. And so we just started to do that last year. This next year will be the second year. And so what I'm hoping is that it will, people will start to pay attention to it. And as a consequence, we'll start to see those improvements.
Thank you.
Thank you, Camille. Moving on to our next question, we have two more in the queue. Our next one is from Cheryl Longrim. Please go ahead.
Hi, Isabel. I have many questions here, but one of them is anything ever going to get done about the staffing ratio in long-term care facilities? Because right now they are so short-staffed, and I understand it's, correct me if I'm wrong, 3.6 hours per resident per day. I don't see that. My mum is in a care facility and I'm there quite a bit, and I just don't see that unless that 3.6 hours includes meal times where they're bringing meals to the table and clearing it up. There's often no nurse in sight. It's very stressful on the staff. And is anything being done about that?
So, Cheryl, to answer your question, something is being done, but the threshold that the province has set that every facility should achieve, or be funded, I should clarify, be funded to achieve, is 3.36 hours per resident per day.
Not 3.6, okay.
Not 3. Now, it is possible that in the care home your mother is in, they aren't funded for that. You can go on to the Quick Facts directory on my website. You can look up your mom's care home, and you might find, for example, they're only funded for 2.8 care hours per day. So that might explain why you're sensing that you're not seeing the sufficient amount of staffing. The direct care hours would not include the people who prepare the meals or serve the meals. Those are not considered direct care hours. What would be considered direct care hours is if a care aide was helping somebody to eat, and some of our residents do require that, and that would be considered a care hour. We are monitoring this very carefully. We know that we have to make funded for the number of care hours needed, but that in fact they are delivering the number of care hours they are funded to deliver. So there's two parts to the equation. Mm-hmm. And right now, what we're able to publicly report on is what they're funded, and this office is working with the ministry around how we are going to be able to confirm in a systematic way so that residents and family members can know that those are the care hours being delivered in that care facility. But the government has, the previous government committed to raising it to 3.36. The current government has met that challenge and has found the money, and I am assured, and I have seen some evidence that the money is rolling out, the care hours are starting to improve, but my understanding, it's going to take about 2 more years before all of the care facilities reach the 3.36 hours.
And to do that, that would mean increasing the staffing ratio, right?
That is correct.
Okay, because right now that's pretty frightening to not have a nurse there, one nurse between three floors floating after 8 p.m., sometimes a bit before. And if something happens to somebody and there's only 2 care aides per side. So anyway, that was a big concern to me. The other question I had is, and hopefully you can answer for me, we applied for a subsidy for my mom, which she needs, but, excuse me, when they have to go directly from a hospital into a care facility, and then you apply for a subsidy once they get to the care facility, people need, with them, Alzheimer's, my mom has Alzheimer's, and they need that, those familiar surroundings, those familiar faces. But when you finally get approved for a subsidy, they want you to pack up and move your family member to a different facility. And I just find that a very inhumane system, and I was wondering if that is ever going to change.
Well, you raise a very interesting point, Cheryl. I didn't highlight this in the report, but amongst the data that we receive is where the people who were admitted to the care facility came from. And what is interesting in British Columbia is that 25% of our admissions come from another care home, and that is much higher, for example, than Alberta, where it's 8%, or Ontario, where it's 7%. And so it is explaining, that number explains the very phenomenon you have just described, that we are moving our residents about within the system of facilities to a much greater degree than other provinces are. And some of that's a good thing, because what is happening is people are being sent to the first available bed. It's not where they want to go. And so when a bed becomes available where they want to go, they can transfer. Some of what the higher number we have will be explained by that, but not totally by that. And so we need to find out, why is this happening? Because you've identified the challenges for the resident and the family member around moving in terms of different surroundings. Very good point.
Yeah, because I just had requested the same area for her, not a when we apply for subsidy, and stated that I would like her to stay within the same facility just because it was becoming familiar to her. And yet we got a call less than 2 weeks later that it was to the oldest and worst care facility in the area. So it's been a struggle, and having been my mom's caregiver prior to all of this, it's had a lot of frustrations for me. But anyway, that's my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl, and thank you very much for the support you've given to your mom as well.
Okay.
Thank you, Cheryl. And just as a quick reminder, if you would like to queue up for a question, please press 01. And so far we have one more question in the queue from Gail Murray. Please go ahead. And Gail has dropped from the queue. So we have no more questions right now. Thank you.
Okay. Again, thank you very much to all of you who've hung in here until the end. I appreciate that. And again, as I've said before, I would encourage you to read the report. It's a short report. You can go to CHI-HI and get all of the data. My report just highlights some of it. And certainly, if you have questions or ideas or suggestions around what some of the data are telling us, please contact my office and let us know. We really do like to hear from all British Columbians on their ideas and thoughts related to caring for our frail and vulnerable older population. So thank you very much to all of you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the Office of Seniors Advocate conference call. Thank you for your participation and have a nice day.